1230 AM, W255DN Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Christopher Cruz. London's busy Heathrow Airport is fully operational today. CBS's Lee Kinnear is there.
Europe's busiest tarmacs are back in business after the spectacular fire at an electrical substation nearby Thursday night caused a power cut to Heathrow Airport. The ripple effect immediate and global.
CBS News has obtained a Department of Homeland Security bulletin that warns domestic and foreign terrorists may target the nation's energy infrastructure. More on that from CBS's Nicole Skanga.
The energy grid is a vulnerable and expansive U.S. critical infrastructure sector that is easy to target. There are a range of threats that are listed in this bulletin, including cyber criminals with ransomware attacks and state actors, but most notably, domestic violence. Violent extremists are the most prevalent physical threat actors targeting energy electrical substations. They're sharing tactics online.
Columbia University in New York City is bowing to demands from the Trump administration. Here's CBS News New York reporter Derek Waller.
Columbia's interim president, Katrina Armstrong, issued a campus-wide letter announcing changes that closely mirror demands made in this March 13th letter from the Trump administration. The federal government demanded the university place the Department of Middle East, South Asian, and African Studies under academic receivership. They also called for a mask ban and for Columbia to empower internal law enforcement.
The two-time former heavyweight boxing champ George Foreman has died.
Foreman wrested the heavyweight championship away from Joe Frazier in a 1973 upset, only to lose it in 1974 in Zaire to Muhammad Ali in the Rumble in the Jungle.
I thought my life was over because when you lose a championship, it's not like you lost a title. You lose yourself because it's like you're not a man anymore.
He went through 2 years of the deepest depression.
Writer and boxing fan Norman Mailer.
He almost didn't come out of it.
But he did come out of it a different man and reclaimed the title 20 years later at age 45.
Second time around, I was so happy about so many things. It made for a better athlete.
Family man, preacher, entrepreneur George Foreman was 76. Michael Toscano, CBS News.
Friday was the last day on the job for employees of the U.S.-funded Radio Free Asia, created after the 1989 Tiananmen massacre in Beijing. CBS's Margaret Brennan spoke with RFA President Bei Tfang.
Congress created us with an eye to giving people in China and other authoritarian countries around Asia the ability to have free press.
So bringing free speech to places where free speech is prohibited.
Exactly.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Brittany Merlot with WXCO News, your news roundup in a quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WXCO website at BullFallsRadio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy is joining forces with Elon Musk and his new government department to cut 10,000 jobs at the U.S. Postal Service. But staff are pushing back. Nadia Ramlagan reports.
American Postal Workers Union President Mark Diamonstein says older adults, veterans, and others depend on the service's commitment to deliver mail to everyone, regardless of where they live, noting the Postal Service delivers to every address in the country, 169 million addresses, and 318 million pieces of mail every day.
Part of the effort on Thursday is to make the postal customers around the country fully aware of this threat, to what belongs to them.
In a letter to Congress, DeJoy said the agency needs help with lease renewals on its retail centers and tackling the issue of counterfeit postage. The Trump administration has also floated the idea of privatizing the post office. Supporters argue the change would make the Postal Service run more efficiently and save money. Polling from the Pew Research Center finds 72% of Americans have a favorable view of the Postal Service. Local unions in Kentucky are participating in a National Day of Action tomorrow. Diamonstein explains that more than five decades ago, postal workers won collective bargaining rights. He says the union is prepared to fight back on any attempt to weaken union rights or target worker protections and working conditions.
It's also very important, I think, for the public to be reminded that good living wage jobs help our communities. They help make them stronger. That good jobs turn over in the community to restaurants, to small retail stores, to housing.
According to the APWU, privatization would eliminate more than 600,000 living wage union jobs, including those of more than 70,000 military veterans.
That's Nadia Ramlagan. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson for Civic Media News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Nice start to the weekend. Bit of a different finish, though. Sunny skies today with a high near 33. Tonight, increasing clouds, a mix of rain and snow developing late, a low near 30. Rain and snow continues on Sunday. It will be breezy, changing to all rain in the afternoon, a high near 42. Currently, it's 21 degrees.
Pat Kreitlow. On Monday, we'll talk to the economics department chair at UW-Eau Claire about the hit Wisconsin's going to take in Donald Trump's trade war.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6. This is Bull Falls Radio, WXCO. Welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice. And now, here's your host, Jim Santel.
This is Amicus Law Review. This, our second hour of our broadcast here on this weekend, talking all about injunctions and the function of federal courts. As always, taking your comments, your questions, your inquiries at 855-752-4842. Right before the top of the hour break, talking about this story that is at the top of our headlines this weekend, having to do with this spat, more than a spat, between Judge James Boasberg, the chief judge of the U.S. District Court in the District of Columbia, and the administration and the attorney general and the allies of this president. The judge is saying that the responses he has gotten up to this point about whether or not the government, your government, has complied with his order have been woefully insufficient. He's talked about the intemperate and disrespectful nature of their filings, the things they've written, the things that they have said. The entire incident is an ugly one, especially because the judge is asking for some very simple information that can and should be provided readily. He has asked the Department of Justice to provide him with some basic, some fundamental basic information, asking for days this past week in various ways to get the administration to tell him, if need be, in camera, under seal. Those are ways of saying you don't have to publish this to the world. You don't have to go into the clerk's office and publish it so that everybody can see it. You can file it under seal, which means only I and the opposing parties will see it. What time did the two planes carrying these Venezuelan immigrants depart the United States of America? What time did they leave American airspace? And what time did they land? More information as well. He's trying to figure out whether or not there was a willful and purposeful violation of the order they entered orally a week ago to bring these planes back, to not have them depart at all. That's a serious problem for the Department of Justice, for the government generally. If indeed he finds out that they purposefully violated his directive, that's rule of law stuff. And that's when the judge does have some remedies here, as do these other judges when it comes to enforcing their orders. You can find parties in contempt, and that's just not a statement. Depending upon the nature of the contempt, there's civil contempt, there's criminal contempt. People can go to jail, and they have gone to jail for failing to follow the orders of judges properly entered in a timely fashion. That is available to him. He has directed Pam Bondi, the Department of Justice, the attorneys appearing in front of him, with whom he is not pleased, to tell him by Tuesday of this week all about this. He is also, and this is equally as Mark has indicated, an important issue. He has also noted that now the government is raising what may be a state secret privilege. That is, we don't have to tell you, we shouldn't have to do any of this because these are all state secrets. On Thursday, the government filed some papers under seal indicating that these answers are forthcoming. But in fact, the judge said the papers filed by the government, by Pam Bondi, repeated the same general information. These are his words about the flights the department lawyers had already given him in previous court filings. Nothing new here about any of this. And he also said that he wants a sworn declaration about the invocation of this privilege, this state secrets privilege, by somebody with authority, with direct involvement in the cabinet-level discussions, he says, about the invocation of this. I don't want some mid-level a person who's going to come in and speculate. He instructed the lawyers from the Justice Department to tell him by Tuesday if the administration intended to actually invoke this state secrets privilege. And again, the government plainly postponing, with somewhat the consent of the judge, giving them extended delays, extended extensions in which to respond. All of this, again, against the backdrop of whether the Alien Enemies Act is, in fact, properly invoked here. The statute passed in 1798 gives the government wide latitude, admittedly, during an invasion, that's the language, or a time of declared war. That's the way the statute reads, declared war, probably invoking the Constitution itself. Congress is the one that declares war, right? To round up and summarily remove any subjects of a hostile nation, that's what the law says, over the age of 14, and describing them as alien enemies. Lots of things to unpack there, of course. The administration says, well, we're under an invasion by these Venezuelan gangs, this violent street gang, Tren de Aragua, and that constitutes an invasion. Unlikely that the judge or any judge would find that that really is an invocation of the Alien Enemies Act, a hostile nation, that these are representatives of that hostile nation, that they're alien enemies. But lawyers for the government are maintaining, presumably, that that's the basis upon which the president is able to do this. Stunningly, once again, our attorney general has said beyond that, this judge has no capacity to even decide what the law is. She has talked about him as being an unelected federal judge. And that's right, he's not. Madam Attorney General, you know that well. Our federal judges are not elected. They're appointed by a president to uphold the law. And you know as well, Attorney General Bondi, that their responsibility to apply the law to the facts and determine whether or not, in this instance, the law, the Alien Enemies Act, has been followed or not. There is certainly, as Mark has indicated, as many people have indicated, as the petitioners themselves have said, these folks were put on these planes allegedly. That's what the judge is trying to get the bottom of as he makes his factual findings. Put on these planes without due process. Who are these people? Are they, in fact, members of this gang? Are they, in fact, members of a hostile nation? They are alien enemies, or are they, as many of the court papers filed during the course of this by some of the petitioners, are many of them have nothing to do with this particular gang or affiliation. The premise upon which many of them apparently were rounding up were some tattoos. Some of them have a tattoo of a logo from a favorite soccer team. Another person says that one of the other tattoos was tattooed because he thought it looked cool. Those kinds of things have nothing to do with an Alien Enemies Act invocation of a hostile nation or alien enemies. But the point of all of that is that as these papers are filed, as the parties are presenting these cases, these positions in front of Judge Boasberg, he is attempting to do things by the process. That's the function for an injunction. It may well be too late. It may well be that there is no calling this back. Probably that is the case. And if there is, in fact, a violation of the law here, of the Alien Enemies Act, then the judge has before him what to do next. Findings of contempt. What kinds of things does he do with respect to the administration having violated the law, arguably, if he makes that finding, not only in violation of the timing of his order, but also under the substantive law itself? That's what he's got in front of him this coming week. Tuesday is going to be a big day once again in front of Judge James Boasberg there in the District of Columbia, all a part of these injunctive attempts to respond. It is a stunningly shocking thing that our attorney general once again believes that this judge has no ability to engage in this at all. Of course, as I said before,
Our president also thinks that because of his involvement in this, which is his oath of office, which he's pursuing, he should be impeached, he should be removed. And indeed, he has even said something even scarier. He's talked about how all of these injunctions our president has have to be stopped before it's too late. Before it's too late. What is that about, Mr. President? Sounds an awful lot like not only an exercise or an attempt to exercise some power that he has got still waiting in the wings, arguably a threat against judiciary. John Roberts again pushes back on that, very tepidly says, well, we shouldn't be talking about impeachment. We'll get to that in just a few moments or so. All of that happening inside this first case that we're talking about here, an amicus, a law review. Let's talk about Elon Musk. Brian called in our first hour to talk about something else Elon Musk is doing these days, having to do with his petition, railing against so-called activist judges and apparently offering people $100 if they'll sign on to that petition. Elon Musk, the subject of another federal judge, this judge, Theodore Chang. He's also a district court judge. He is in the District of Maryland. Efforts by Elon Musk and his team, to shutter the United States Agency for International Development. This is USAID. We've spent a lot of time talking about this when this first happened. Those efforts likely violated the Constitution in multiple ways and robbed Congress of its authority to oversee the dissolution of an agency it created. That's not me talking. That's a federal district court judge talking in the context of one of these requests for injunctive relief. That's Theodore Chang, U.S. District Court for Maryland. Appeared to be the first time, at least one of the first times, that a judge has actually been told, been reined in directly. Mr. Musk being told that his so-called team cannot do this based upon the finding, and here we go, that Musk himself has acted as an officer of the United States without being properly appointed to that role by the president. Judge Chang, fine, you've got no authority, and that's my pushback on this notion that there's a department that somehow he's the secretary or the lead of a department that does not exist. The judge seizing on that concept and saying, whatever you're doing, you haven't been properly appointed, you've got no authority to do that. Judge Chang writing, in connection again with this initial order, that a group of unnamed aid workers who had sued to stop the demolition, the destruction of USAID and its programs were likely to succeed in the lawsuit. And what he's doing there is he's invoking that standard, a likelihood of success on the merits. That's exactly what we talked about earlier. He agreed with the contention of those petitioners that Musk's rapid assertion of power here, his claim to be able to do all of this over these executive agencies, including shuttering of USAID, was likely in violation of the Constitution and its appointments clause. The judge went on. He also ordered the agency operations be partially restored, something that's going to be very difficult given what has happened here, sort of like the planes now transporting those immigrants to Venezuela. Maybe too late already. Though the reprieve here, again, is likely temporary, he ordered the team reinstate email access to all current USAID employees, including those who are on paid leave. Also ordered that they submit a plan for employees to reoccupy a federal office from which they were evicted last month. He barred Team Musk from engaging in any further work related to the shutdown of USAID. And once again, given that much of the agency's workforce has basically been shut down, the contracts have been terminated, the monies are no longer gone, it's not clear what effect the judge's rulings here would have. But it underscores once again the notion of the immediacy in all of this. Only a skeleton crew of workers are still employed by the agency. But that going on again in Maryland, a district court judge saying, no, you can't do it under the injunctive function of our federal courts. More of that coming up as Amicus, a Law Review, continues.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, Wausau's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Did you know there's a city in Wisconsin that goes all in on the idea of celebrating St. Patrick's Day for more than a week? Members of the Shamrock Club of New London, about an hour west of Green Bay, lead the festivities, which brings thousands of visitors to the area. But do you know what has officially kicked it all off for more than 40 years? Here's club member Ryan Lanning with the answer.
The Monday of our St. Patrick's week is we always have Leprechaun Day, and the leprechauns are responsible for changing the population signs symbolically from New London to New Dublin, and then they visit various schools and nursing homes, and we bring smiles more than anything, and we like to enlighten our community. That's part of what we're about, and truthfully, I think everybody looks forward to seeing the green suits and all the mischief and shenanigans we like to pull. It's just a great time for everybody.
Even the city council votes to make New Dublin the official name for New London this time of year. That is one slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel, talking about the second of five orders we're talking about here on the broadcast. This one issued by Judge Chang just this past week, telling Elon Musk and his group of people, that indeed they should not have anything more to do with the shutdown of USAID. He finds along the way that Elon Musk had personally and unlawfully overseen the dismantling of the agency, offering a firm rejection of the operations authority. And again, another very sternly worded order. That's the pattern on all of this. You've got judges saying, not only are you violating the law, but let me tell you this in the strongest language possible. Judge Chang warning that any skirting, any violation of his orders would result in holding Musk and members of his team in contempt. What is contempt again? It's finding that you failed to follow my orders. And the sanction that judges have is to make that finding, arguably to impose sanctions in the wake of that. That could involve, depending upon the process, even afforded in a contempt proceeding, that could involve jailing. And that may be the remedy that's coming up at some point. Lawyers representing the government, your government, said that, Musk was not, in fact, the head of this particular agency that's going after USAID. The judge appeared to dismiss those claims entirely, noting again that Elon Musk had targeted and celebrated his actions to dramatically downsize USAID very publicly, including the firing of the vast majority of its workers. Here's what the judge said. He said DOGE, and yes, he's using that phrase, has taken numerous actions without any apparent advanced approval by agency leadership. No authorization is what he's saying. Nothing consistent with the Constitution, with legislation. The judge goes on to reel off a whole list of other examples. The Education Department, the National Institutes of Health, Energy Department, where the Musk team apparently is pursuing these cuts on their own without authority. And Judge Chang says, taken together, these are his words, taken together, these facts support the conclusion that USAID has effectively been eliminated. Stunning, stunning again in court, underscoring once again the need for action, immediate action, because we have an administration here that is acting very quickly, postponing the actions of federal judges and keeping not only the challengers at bay, but effectively mooting any actions that a federal judge might be able to take. That's number two, Venezuelan immigrants, USAID shuttering. Let's talk about the Social Security Administration once again. Elon Musk at the force of a federal judge here as well. Just this past Thursday, a judge, her name is Ellen Hollander. She's in the District of Maryland once again. She issues a temporary restraining order. What does she do? She bars the Social Security Administration from granting Elon Musk and members of his team access to sensitive records stored in the agency's system. Or she says, from holding on to that data they had already taken. Stop doing this. No access to those records. You can't have access to any of the sensitive data. She blocks Social Security's top officials, and a fellow named Leland Dudek, who has again loomed large in news recently, and Michael Russo, and the other agency's employees from granting the Musk team engineers entry into their systems. In other words, if the Musk folks show up, Mr. Dudek, Mr. Russo, you cannot give them access to these systems. Her order, appropriately, and this is what judges do, they issue a balanced determination, even at a TRO level, not overstating their own power, their own impact of their orders. She says her order is focusing only on documents like tax records that presumably would allow Musk and the others to analyze people at an individual level. And that's the important aspect of this, right? The order, again, from Judge Hollander, Federal District Court Judge Hollander, obliged by her oath of office under the Constitution to enter decisions based upon the law and the facts as she decides them, states that the agency could indeed provide the Musk team with redacted or anonymized, that's a fancy way of saying you render it anonymous, so you redact the information about specific recipients of Social Security benefits that facilitated or somehow supported a broader analysis without running afoul of federal privacy laws. But she says, you can't have specific information with specific names and identifying information. We know that these lawsuits, again, focusing upon the Social Security Administration here, are also involved in incursions into the Treasury Department, the Education Department. Judges there have issued similar orders barring these officials from handing over similar sensitive information. And all of this goes on as the courts continue to wrestle with what to do in these emergent and emergency situations. Judge Hollander, she writes a 137-page opinion. It accompanies the order that the intrusion into Social Security data was concerning enough to justify, and she imposes a 2-week restraining order. This TRO lasts for 2 weeks while the lawsuit continues. This is a big deal, she says, and I'm going to impose this TRO for 2 weeks. We're to come back, she says. And in the meantime, my orders have got to be in place. She said that retirees, when submitting their bank information and other financial data to the agency to receive common benefits, had a reasonable expectation that their records would not be used to inform a government-wide effort to slash spending. Here's what the judge says. The unrestricted access of this personal information that the Social Security Administration provided to the Musk team without specified aid. Again, this is the kind of thing that judges do. They address what is the nature of the harm here. And she says no specified need here and or without adequate training. That's plainly addressing the incapacity of this team even to know what it's doing. Detail agreements and or background investigations of these team members, she wrote, using abbreviations for personally identifiable information and the Social Security Administration, all of that would be highly offensive to an objectively reasonable person. And that, again, that's the standard, right? This is not the judge herself imposing her own personal or even political views. She's saying, objectively, this information cannot be, under the law, disclosed to these people. She goes on to say, the expectation of privacy shared by plaintiffs' members, and these are the people who are bringing the challenge, is objectively reasonable. It is almost self-evident, she says, that in our society, this personal information, such as Social Security numbers, medical information, and certain financial records, are regarded as private, sensitive, and confidential information. It is stunning that we have to say this out loud. She's writing this now in her TR orders. It comes, of course, a month after a coalition of labor unions brought these lawsuits to stop Musk and his team. Musk, of course, who's called Social Security a Ponzi scheme, and these efforts to try to stop him from targeting the agency's agenda. Musk has also backed cuts to the agency's call centers, other changes that many people have warned could make customer support a whole lot less accessible, not just in Washington, D.C., but in states around the country. The order imposed by Judge Hollander
expires in 14 days. And before then, again, part of the process, the function of federal courts, she's ordering everybody to file motions, give me memorandums, tell me what more we should do to stop this kind of intrusion from happening. Meanwhile, the TRO remains in place, that also coming out of the district court in Maryland. When we come back, two more of these, transgender bans and EPA money recoups here on Amicus, a law review.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO, Wausau's home for the Todd Allball Show.
CBS News Brief. Heathrow Airport says it is fully operational after being shut down over an electrical fire. It is adding flights but warns that severe disruptions will continue for days. President Trump has revoked the security clearances of prominent Democrats, including several members of the Biden administration. CBS's Nicole Skanga.
President Trump revoked the security clearances of former President Joe Biden, former Vice President Kamala Harris, and several former top administration officials, including Secretary of State Antony Blinken, another former Secretary of State on that list, Hillary Clinton.
The world is remembering boxing legend George Foreman, who died yesterday at the age of 76, surrounded by loved ones. He was a two-time heavyweight champion. CBS's Wendy Gillette.
His family announcing his death on social media with an emotional tribute, saying he lived his life marked by unwavering faith.
CBS News Brief. I'm Allison Keyes.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Badgers face BYU. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. March Madness, it's Wisconsin and Brigham Young University tonight in Denver. Badgers forward Nolan Winter. On what kind of team is BYU?
Yeah, I mean, a very tough team, well coached. Shoot the three at a very high level, so going to be a point emphasis for us to limit those. But no, they're really good in transition too, so it's going to be a good game for us and a good test for us for sure.
Game time, 6:25. It was one and done for Marquette, losing last night in the first round to New Mexico, led by head coach Richard Pitino, 75-66. Marquette shot is smart after the loss.
Yeah, congrats to New Mexico, Coach Pitino. I thought they won the battle of poise. They were the more poised team over the majority of the game.
Boys high school basketball in the state finals today at the Kohl Center in Madison. Tonight, Racine Park against Tulsa West in Division II, followed by Wisconsin Lutheran versus Marshfield in Division I. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Nice start to the weekend. Bit of a different finish, though. Sunny skies today with a high near 33. Tonight, increasing clouds, a mix of rain and snow developing late, a low near 30. Rain and snow continues on Sunday. It will be breezy, changing to all rain in the afternoon, a high near 42. Currently, it's 21 degrees.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A Washington state audit of rejected 2020 mail-in ballots offers insight on whose ballots are more likely to be rejected and recommends actions to reduce that number, over 37,000 in 2024. Primary reasons for rejection include ballots received or postmarked after Election Day, a missing signature on a ballot envelope, or the voter's signature couldn't be confirmed. Auditors found 2020 rates varied from a high of 1.5% in Franklin County to 0.02% in Columbia County, but they also found higher rejections of younger voters, 18 to 21, where 2.6% of ballots were rejected, and black voters at 2.5%. They also found that non-native English speakers were 47% more likely to have ballots rejected. Signature issues can often be cured, but many voters don't or can't correct it. The auditors recommended outreach programs on college campuses, sending letters and calling voters with curable signature issues, more training on signature verification, opening early voting centers 18 days before the election, an advisory committee for disabled voters, and ballot drop boxes for every 15,000 voters. In the 2024 general election, Washington's statewide rejection rate had dropped to 0.94%, but of those, over 24,000 were rejected for a mismatched signature. Find a link to the audit at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
Did you know VA home loans are a key to home ownership for those who served?
In the military, we make a lot of sacrifices, and with a VA loan, it makes it easier for us to get a home.
We were able to purchase this home and then use the money that we were going to use as a down to actually fix up the home. I would tell anybody who is interested in getting a VA loan to just do it.
To learn more about VA home loans, visit va.gov/homeloans.
Dom Salvia.
Next time, our favorite Delano Democrat, Harvey Kaye, will discuss the threats posed to Social Security by the Trump administration. Does calling about missing Social Security payments make you a fraudster? Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel. We are spending this broadcast talking about the function of federal courts to entertain requests for injunctive relief, injunction functions of our federal courts. We've already talked about Venezuelan immigrants and USAID shuttering Social Security Administration. Let's talk about two more of them. Then we're going to get back to callers and texters. So delighted to have so many comments and inquiries about the subject of our broadcast this weekend. Let's talk about another one of these cases. This comes out of the Pentagon. A federal judge just this past week blocked the Trump administration. Yes, another injunctive order, another TRO. This judge is Anna Reyes, R-E-Y-E-S. She's got some very strong language for this administration, stopping the Trump administration from banning transgender people from serving the military. Again, another very forcefully written opinion, rebuking the president's efforts. Anna Reyes is her name. She is a federal district court judge, issuing an injunction that allows trans groups to keep serving in the U.S. military. In other words, you retain your position, do not go away. And she does that under rules that were established by prior administrations until their lawsuit against the Trump administration's ban is decided. And that, again, is part of the process here. Stop this bad thing from happening. We'll figure this all out. We're straightening it all out down the road. But Judge Reyes, again, as do the other judges, says at the very top here, the ban at bottom invokes derogatory language to target a vulnerable group in violation of the Fifth Amendment. The government, the Department of Justice, had argued that the courts have to defer to military judgment. But in her own 79-page opinion, judges are animated about this. They're writing lots because there's a lot to say, and it underscores the ferocity with which they're responding to these plainly unconstitutional and illegal orders from the White House. 79-page opinion. Judge Anna Reyes says the government had thrown together a ban based on next to no evidence, and that, as she said, the law does not demand that the court rubber stamp illogical judgments based on conjecture. A little bit of information here. According to the Defense Department, about 4,200 current service members, or about 0.2% of the entire military force, are transgender. They include pilots and senior officers and nuclear technicians, Green Beret, rank-and-file soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, across the board. Despite their relatively small numbers, they obviously provide important contributions to our military forces. They are plainly the focus of President Trump's focus in his executive order. He issues in early on this caustically worded executive order that the judge makes reference to. He talks about how trans troops have afflicted the military with radical gender ideology, and that, as he said, the adoption of a gender identity inconsistent with an individual's sex conflicts with a soldier's commitment, listen to this, to an honorable, truthful, and disciplined lifestyle, even in one's personal life. In defending this in front of Judge Reyes, the attorneys, your attorneys from the Department of Justice, has invoked that same language. And interestingly, that the attorneys who are invoking that language and pushing back against the TROs and the injunction here have said that even if there's animus, even if there's anger or hostility toward this group, that is not sufficient.
That is not sufficient to overrule the executive branch. Stay away from this. And so here's Judge Reyes again, recent hearing. She spends a full day questioning those DOJ attorneys who are defending this policy, showing, as the other judges as well do, great frustration. She goes line by line through reports on transgender service members that the government had cited when the ban was first issued. And she notes along the way that they were years out of date. Antiquated information here. Defense Department's conclusions, she said, were totally, grossly misleading because they cherry-picked one part and misrepresented even that. And if it isn't clear up to now, here's what she says. She says the evidence of this in support of this directive to get rid of our transgender service members and in support of the challenge to it, she said the evidence presented by the government was so thin that the Defense Department may well have cited the latest Beyoncé album. That's what a federal judge said in a federal court. She said, how can you even say that a whole group of people lack humility? She said to the government lawyers, it just makes no sense. Again, pushing back on this theory that well, the president can have animus toward a group and you've got no capacity to do any of this. The Trump administration's efforts plainly is a remarkable departure, as we know historically, a 77-year trend in military toward welcoming an increasingly diverse variety of Americans. It was generally the White House view that pushing for more inclusion, presidents of all political persuasions, and significantly military leaders have repeatedly opposed the transgender ban. And nonetheless, there it is, a final footnote, that as a part of this, of course, as we know, inside the Department of Justice, there has been a rollback there, including firing of top military leaders. We talked about those before. Ending recognition of Gay Pride and Black History Month, purging content mentioning diversity and inclusion efforts from the Defense Department websites, and even removing a photo of the B-29 bomber that dropped the first atomic bomb. Why? Why? Presumably because its name, the Enola Gay, was flagged in a search for words the department wanted to scrub. That's what's going on right now. That's what the judge, Ana Reyes, responded to so negatively. She also said along the way she won't be gaslit. Won't be gaslit. She said, I'm not going to let you say some things in public that you don't say here in court. And she also said, again, indicating her frustration, she said, I am not an idiot. Don't take me for a fool, government. I know what's going on here. That's Ana Reyes. She joins, again, Ellen Hollander and Theodore Chang and James Boasberg in pushing back in the strongest language possible. And finally, let's talk about another judge we've talked about a lot. And her name is Tanya Chutkan. Remember her? She is the one who presided while it was pending in that lawsuit, that criminal case against the current president, alleging violations of law in connection with January 6th. Well, the same judge has temporarily blocked just this past week, again, another TRO, another injunctive order. The Environmental Protection Agency, now under the Trump administration, its attempt to recoup to grab back about $20 billion in Biden-era climate grants. And that's plainly the latest judicial setback for Donald Trump in all of these kinds of things. On Tuesday, U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan, yes, she's there in the District of Columbia, she prevented the EPA from reclaiming money that it had deposited at Citibank for the groups Climate United, Coalition for Green Capital, and Power Forward Communities had not only anticipated, but had been granted. The decision did not revive the group's ability to draw from the funds, postponing that decision until after further proceedings. So, again, she's entering this tempered order. She's not going down the road completely, but she's also saying, at least initially, you have to stop doing this. She says this, the EPA gives no legal justification for the termination of the contracts. And she goes on to say that the administration has only vaguely outlined its allegations that the grant program was marked somehow inappropriately. Again, this fight over the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, a major front, once again, in the present administration's battle to claw back billions of dollars in former President Joe Biden's climate and clean energy agenda. The three nonprofit groups say they may be forced to lay off employees and cancel long-planned projects if they lose these grants, and that's what Eileen Chutkan is responding to. Rather than declare a winner, the decision plainly was merely aimed at preserving the status quo. That's what Chutkan said. That's what judges do in their balanced approach to all this. Plainly not giving the challengers everything they want. Her order does not immediately restore access to the group's accounts, nor does it officially kill the EPA's right to press for the contract determination, but it does put the brakes on all this. The award's about $7 billion for Climate United, $5 billion for CGC, and $2 billion for Power Forward Communities are designed to do what? They're designed to spur private sector investment in energy-efficient housing, clean energy, electric vehicle charging infrastructure projects, particularly in communities where we know that struggle to attract private sector dollars is important. Five other nonprofits receive the remainder of the $20 billion total. EPA administrator has repeatedly accused the Biden administration of engaging in inappropriate conduct in connection with the authorization of this. And again, this litigation continues as the judge not only issues this order, but also indicates future litigation on all of this. A lot of that coming up in the days and weeks ahead. That Tanya Chutkan joining Anna Reyes and Ellen Hollander and Theodore Chang and James Bosley just this past week in entering TROs to stop these things from happening, but do it once again in a functional way that gives credence to the standards by which injunctive orders are entered, and also giving all the parties an opportunity to be heard. And that's what this process is all about. Once again, underscoring the vacuousness and the inappropriateness of our attorney general saying that these processes are somehow inappropriate, that federal judges are not doing their jobs, referring to them with vicious names, name calling once again from this administration, all of that wildly inappropriate. When it comes to the attorney general, who should be above all of this, likewise calling at least as to James Boasberg there in the District of Columbia, that he himself has no authority. Shame on you, Madam Attorney General. That is not your role. We'll give others the opportunity. You can disagree with the decisions themselves. You can say, you know what? The standards have not been properly met. But these attacks upon the judiciary have got to stop. They're wildly inappropriate. They're inconsistent with our rule of law process in America, and they should be condemned. John Roberts, of course, pushed back on this somewhat. And he said in a fairly tepid order that for more than two centuries, it has been established that impeachment is not an appropriate response to disagreement concerning a judicial decision. The normal appellate review process exists for that purpose. And, of course, he's responding to complaints about Boasberg, who is called a radical left lunatic in a social media post. And also, again, from our president, indicating that these nationwide injunctions, presumably calling upon our chief justices, have got to stop before it's too late. What is that about, Mr. President? Well, if you really want to do something, Mr. Chief Justice, write a letter directly to the president and take him on. You don't even mention Donald Trump in your statement. Write a letter that not only pushes back on impeachment, but also says that these attacks, the name-calling, the sense from the attorney general, from the president, from the White House, that these lawyers who are petitioning on both sides, have a right to be in court and have a right to answer questions by the judges. And the judges, by virtue of their oaths of office, have the obligation under our Constitution and the laws to ask the questions, to make determinations based upon the law and the facts. That's what the Chief Justice should be saying. Give us a more robust, a more full-throated lesson on civics. Call upon you, Mr. Chief Justice, to do just that and tell Donald Trump and tell, yes, my Attorney General, that they are wrong when they take just the opposite. Tell the dean of the law school from which our attorney general graduated. His name is Dean Benjamin Barros. Tell him that if this is what they're educating their lawyers on at that law school, that they need to do a curriculum revamp because it's simply wrong. All of that leads, of course, to our wonderful texters and our participants in our discussion. Appreciate very much the comment, for example, from Wendy. She writes, I'm concerned about the recent judgment. I think she's probably making reference to the EPA issue that will essentially put Greenpeace out of business. Can you explain the ruling and what, if anything, Greenpeace can do to get that relief? Well, exactly. That's exactly right, Wendy. When these groups go into court, They are attempting to push back on the executive orders. We'll see. We'll see what, in that particular case, Tanya Chutkan does about these claims that the rescission of the monies were not appropriate. Jean writes in from Waterloo. She says, you know, as we go further down this road, even heard that they may declare martial law, obviously a subject for a later discussion, but that the fact that we're even talking about that and invoking what happened, of course, in South Korea not too long ago, the pushback on that appropriate where from the people of South Korea saying, no, we're not going to permit that to happen at all. When we come back, more from our listeners, our callers, about all of this, and then some other commentary about America and the rule of law when Amicus, a law review, continues.
Falls Radio, WXCO.
Time for the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. A record number of visitors toured America's national parks and monuments last year, including sites here in Wisconsin. More than 331 million people flocked to national parks in 2024. Here in Wisconsin, Apostle Islands and the St. Croix Scenic National Riverway both saw boosts in visitors. It's unclear, though, what the summer travel season will hold this year after the Trump administration fired 1,000 National Parks employees across the country on Valentine's Day. Time to say happy birthday to our state parks. This year, Wisconsin's state park system turns 125. Our oldest park is Interstate Park, located along the St. Croix National Scenic Riverway, established back in 1900. For a deep dive into environmental issues and what you can do to protect Wisconsin's water, air, and land, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio WXCO, Wausau's home for Up North News Radio.
This is Amicus Law Review. This is the final segment of our broadcast this weekend. More of this obviously coming up in the future as well. Appreciate so much our callers and those folks who are texting in as well. Len, talking about this impeachment discussion that's out there between the Chief Justice, the President of the United States of America. Len saying impeachment should proceed when the law is not followed. Absolutely right. There have been articles of impeachment introduced in the House of Representatives against James Boasberg, alleging that he is engaged in high crimes and misdemeanors, which, yes, indeed, that's the language of the Constitution. Again, appreciate very much that comment again from you, Len, saying that impeachment should proceed again when the law is not followed, not when the law is followed, similar to violating one's oath of office. Appreciate that comment as well, Len. We also have on the line calling in from Merrill. Cornell, you've been on the line for a while. Your contribution to our discussion this weekend.
Well, thanks, James. Great show. Yeah, I have two questions or some information. The one is if ISIS comes to a person's door, that they have to have a signed warrant by a judge, or you can't get into the, you don't have to allow them into the house. Now, I just want to pause here. You're talking about global warming and that the temperatures in the whole world in January were the hottest in 150 years. And also the CO2 level is the highest in a million years. And that's like wrapping a blanket around the world, and it's going to get a lot hotter. So I'm sorry if I took too much time. I'll let you answer on this.
Not at all, Merrill. Cornell, we appreciate very much your comment here. Again, the comment you make about climate change, those are the kinds of things that, again, in a full-blown hearing in front of Tanya Chutkan, they will plainly look to the reasons why these monies were initially allocated. Obviously, a lot of it's going to be procedural, and the process by which they were doled out the monies to these various groups. But underlying that, anticipate that very likely Tanya Chutkan will talk about some of the underlying reasons for these and whether or not the groups
who have gotten these great numbers of dollars indeed are focused upon that end. She's got to have a balanced approach to all of this. So your comment, Cornell, is right on target. And as to the first one, it's actually ICE. It's right. Those are the folks from Homeland Security who are responsible for enforcing our immigration laws here in the United States, along with others. And the general rule is, yes, that's right. Under the Fourth Amendment, this is James Madison stuff. If someone knocks on your door, they need to have some judicial authorization of some kind. Typically a federal judge, could be a state judge as well, could be a magistrate, could be some other judicial officer who says that there's probable cause to believe that there is someone here or some evidence inside this location, could be a home, could be another venue, could be a business, that suggests that there's criminality here. That's our basic fundamental notion. There are exceptions to that. Of course, there's the consent. You can permit agents of the government, state and federal government, to come in. There are exigent circumstances, all kinds of things. But the warrant requirement is fundamental. You've got it just right, Cornell. Those kinds of things. And it goes to the larger issue we've also talked about when it comes to the injunction, the attempted injunction by James Boasberg as to these Venezuelan immigrants and the other cases as well. It's all about process, right? We're not prejudging any of these cases. We're simply ensuring that there are judges who take a look at them and make determinations, for example, in this Fourth Amendment setting about whether there is probable cause. If it is there, then indeed the warrant is issued and authorization is given by the government to go in. If indeed, under the laws on all these cases involving USAID, the Social Security laws, and the laws of the Department of Defense, the regulations there, all of these kinds of things, if there's support for doing it, that's the reason why you have these hearings, so people can come in and testify about them, the reasons, the rational basis for our government doing various things, and the connection between those things and the benefits that come to the citizens of the United States of America. All of that highly relevant, Cornell. Appreciate your contribution as well to all of this. And we also have a question coming in from Genesee Depot. As ordinary citizens have standing to file charges over what is being done to Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare. It's an interesting question once again. The process there, of course, is to petition your elected officials on the policy side of things, that is Medicaid, Medicare, all of those, Social Security. They are creatures, plainly, of the legislature, right? That's why all these judges are saying, let's take a look what the law said in creating those programs. If indeed the administration is violating the legislation, then we've got to restrain them. We've got to enjoin them from doing that. So a first response is you need to get to your legislature and encourage them to do the oversight and indeed to pass legislation if indeed another branch of government, namely the executive branch, is overreaching on all of that. Can private individuals file lawsuits? Absolutely. In virtually all of these cases we've talked about in this segment of our broadcast, you've got private individuals. You've got individuals who are being tossed out of the military, who are not getting the benefits that they would otherwise get, who are concerned about the exposure of private information, their medical information, their Social Security information. They're concerned, frankly, about family members who are not members of a gang, arguably, and they're now overseas in a foreign prison. They're concerned about not getting the monies to which they were entitled under a process and now compromising the safety, security, the legitimacy of our air and our water. All of those things brought by private individuals. I would offer, especially now, there were times in the past when, yes, indeed, the Department of Justice would do those kinds of things on your behalf. The Civil Rights Division, the Civil Division, all sorts of lawyers inside the Department of Justice, ensuring that private individuals, even entities of government, are following the law. In this administration, and this is the concern underscored by all of these injunction function illustrations, now we have got just the reverse. And so private individuals, Jim, again, your comment from Genesee Depot,
You're the ones who need to file these lawsuits. And this is the reason why, once again, the attorneys are so very important here, not only in putting together the bases for these, but making the cases. The importance of lawyers in advancing the rule of law, the importance of federal judges as one of our guardrails, other systems also out there. We talk about more of this, including next week, more about what's happening when it comes to law firms and institutions of higher learning in America. Program note for next week, we'll talk more about that as Amicus Law Review continues here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media every weekend. Join us for those future discussions. Thanks for being with me this weekend. Have a good weekend, everybody.
This is Bull Falls Radio, WXCO. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we've got Angela Lang from Block here as our co-host for the day. Also, Representative Darren B. Madison, and This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by the FCC and are required to accept all ads for federal candidates. We also air state and local candidates, as well as paid ads from issue and PAC groups. Truth is rarely as simple as any political ad may claim. So again, we urge you to think critically about what you hear in the spirit of promoting authentic and respectful civic dialogue.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Allison Keyes. There's fallout from President Trump's order to dismantle the Department of Education, as some of the agencies he says will take over some of its responsibilities are already short-staffed because of the purging of the federal government. CBS's Doug Williams explains.
The SBA cut 43% of its workforce. They're in charge of over $1.5 trillion in student loans and say they plan to bring accountability back to the program. HHS went even further, laying off the majority of their employees by offering buyouts a few weeks back. Whoever's left is now in charge of nutrition and special needs at schools across the country.
Now to London, where Heathrow Airport is up and running again after an electrical fire. It is adding flights so 10,000 more can travel today, but disruptions will continue. The BBC's Ellie Price.
This is a very much a safety-led industry. Of course, there's air traffic control,